WWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yeah, welcome along to the FWA podcast. Every week we talk to a football writer about the big stories in the world of football and have a look forward to the action at the coming weekend. We've got the FA Cup, of course, this weekend. And I'm delighted to say that Ian McIntosh joins us to have a chat about that and have a look at who's going to finish in the top three or four of the Premier League as well. Ian, welcome to the podcast. You well?
Yeah, very well. Thanks very much for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Ian is on Twitter, at Ian McIntosh, the editor of The Set Pieces, and as well as being a roving football reporter for ESPN. Tell us what The Set Pieces is, first of all, Ian, before we get into it, because I've only just discovered it, and I think I've been missing out.
Yeah, I think you have been missing out. It's a little football feature website. We're not really interested so much in chasing news or chasing clickbait or telling you 17 things you never knew about Theo Walcott's dog. Or anything like that. There's no chase for hits or anything. It's sort of non-time sensitive, intelligent football features. So we've got interviews with people like Tim Lees, who's a youth coach at Liverpool. We've got Peter Butler, who's the national team manager of Botswana and has managed all over the world. So it's a kind of almost like a curiosity shop of features and interviews.
And just have a look at the Twitter feed. I presume this is a feature where people draw something and then they send it into the Nigel Pearson. Oh my! Wow!
Yeah!
Wow!
That really escalated very quickly.
Brilliant. The last one that was posted from Mar Rudlow app is amazing. Actually, it's some sketch that is. It's a fantastic piece of artwork.
A lot of very talented people out there. We always thought if we're going to do competitions, we're not going to just do stupid multiple choice questions or anything like that. We'll get people working. So we instructed people to draw terrifying pictures of Nigel Pearson that they would use to frighten their children in biro on the back of envelopes. And the results were, I mean, they scared me. Never mind my kids.
Yeah, John. I think it's Johnny Rivers on Twitter. Has just taken it to a new level as well. Go and check out at The Set Pieces on Twitter to see what we're talking about. from that to the race for the Champions League places in the Premier League. At the moment, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal, Man United occupy the four places. Liverpool 2 points behind Man United, and then Southampton are dropping a little bit like a stone. Man United, Ian, have taken the whole not playing well and winning to a whole new level. If they thought that Sir Alex, if people always used to say, "Oh yeah, Fergie's teams, they don't play that well, but they always get the win." That's looking back now, Man United fans must have thought that was like, you know, the greatest Brazilian team ever. This is unbelievable. I don't know how they're doing it, but Man United are hanging on in there. Do you think they'll finish in the top four, Manchester United, come the end of the season?
Well, it's almost got to the point where it doesn't actually matter what anyone thinks. You can't base anything on logic when it comes to Manchester United. They're not a good football team. There are a lot of very, very good players who aren't clicking at all, and yet it doesn't seem to be holding them back at all. I swear even David Moyes' teams played better than this, but just didn't get these kind of results. And the really strange thing was I was down in Swansea for the game there, and there were actually elements of their play that were really, really good. They started to click through the middle, linking up the midfield and the attack, and that game, of course, they lost. Mm. It makes little sense, no rhyme or reason to what they're doing. I would say that Liverpool will finish in the top four. They will be a real danger for Manchester United, and I think Arsenal could be the rogue element. But making predictions on that one is probably not going to work out well for anyone.
Mm. Liverpool are even money to finish in the top four, so they're the kind of the outsiders of of Arsenal, Man United, and Liverpool. Arsenal, of course, always do the top four. The top four is like their title, isn't it? As long as they finish in the top four, nothing else really matters, I suppose. They can be embarrassed by Monaco in the Champions League. They could, not win anything else, but top four is all that matters to the Gunners, and they'll do it again, won't they? To be fair.
I don't know.
Do you think so?
I honestly don't know. They're a very difficult team to read as well. One Arsenal fan said to me once that every season was like playing Russian roulette but putting another bullet in the chamber. Sooner or later, that gun's going to go off. They are odd because they have started doing some things that you didn't expect them to do, like going to Manchester City and playing a sort of defensive counter-attacking game and actually coming away with the points. Had they done that more in the past, they'd have won far more over the last 10 years. But at the same time, you know, the same frailties are there. You can still see weaknesses. You would expect them to do what they usually do, which is batter the little teams and put enough points on the board that it won't be too much of an issue. But this is a very, very odd season. And again, I'm looking at Liverpool with very few distractions, with Daniel Sturridge, their key player, who is so fresh and ready and hungry, that while everyone else is exhausted, he's going to be just coming into form in the final furlong. You've got Raheem Sterling, who's had a winter break, very sensibly sent out to go and rest and recuperate. So you would expect him to get through the final stages of the season. Of course, no European commitments either. And there's a lot of momentum and a lot of returning confidence there. So someone's going to end up upset.
Yeah, and no Steven Gerrard either, of course. And to be fair to Brendan Rodgers, is after the initial kind of shock, he's managed that wonderfully well. There's also a market, WilliamHill.com, for who will finish third, effectively. This is the market without Chelsea and Manchester City. I guess the bookmakers are pretty much saying, well, they're going to finish in the top two. Man City are 4 points ahead of Arsenal, so you can understand why. And given what you've just been saying there, Ian, you know, Arsenal are the favourites to finish third, 8-15, because that's where they are at the moment. Manchester United are the second favourites to finish third at 5-2. And Liverpool are 6-1 to finish in third spot. Now, they're only 3 points behind Arsenal at the moment. So it's not like that seems a big price to think. You can see Arsenal dropping 3 points somewhere along the line. Obviously, Liverpool would have to win every game. But, you know, even if Liverpool won, you know, eight out of the remaining 10 games, and let's be fair, they haven't lost a 90-minute match for, I think it's 21 now. They lost to Chelsea and Beşiktaş on penalties. That seems a reasonable bet to me. 6-1 for Liverpool to finish third.
Absolutely. With 10 games to go, I think people sometimes get a little bit overexcited. I mean, it wasn't long ago that Man City dropped points at home and the gap was 7 points between Man City and Chelsea with 14 games to go. Yeah. And everyone was going, oh, well, that's it. The title's finished. They say it's not. That's a lot of games, particularly at this stage of the season and particularly when there's teams with Champions League involvement who are going to start feeling the pace. Weird things happen at this time of the season. And a 3-point gap with 10 games left to go is nothing at all. I think all of those teams up there, Arsenal, Manchester United and Liverpool, will all lose at least once somewhere down there on the run-in. It's going to be absolutely carnage.
Yeah,
so it's going to be interesting. I wouldn't read too much into anything right now.
No, it's going to be interesting to see. We started by talking about Manchester United and their next few fixtures after the FA Cup. They've got Tottenham at home, they've got Liverpool away, and they've got Villa at home, they've got Man City at home, and then they've got Chelsea away, Everton away, and then the last four against West Brom at Old Trafford, Crystal Palace away, Arsenal at home, and Hull away. So we are going to see what Man United are made of, because they're playing all of the big teams in the remaining matches.
And not only that, not only are they playing teams that they're fighting with, but they're playing teams who are fighting for their lives as well.
Yeah.
You know, this time of the season, the games you want are basically Newcastle and West Ham.
Stoke, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see what Man United are made of over the course of the next few weeks and months. The FA Cup then this weekend, four ties, of course. Bradford, Reading, Aston Villa, West Brom, Liverpool, Blackburn and Man United, Arsenal. They're all on the TV, thankfully, this time, so Bradford won't feel left
finally
out. I'm expecting the BBC to, or BT Sport, to drag out Dynamo, the famous Bradfordian magician, to illustrate the magic of the FA Cup with Bradford against Reading. They probably would have wanted a slightly more glamorous tie, Bradford, after beating Chelsea and Sunderland. But this gives them a great opportunity to get to Wembley. I mean, whatever you think of an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, Bradford won't care if they get there, will they? Or Reading, for that matter.
Well, no, that would be their third trip to Wembley as well in the space of a couple of years.
Amazing. So
they're becoming veterans. I think that may be as many as Liverpool, very close to the number of times Liverpool have been to the new Wembley. I think they've got every chance to be full of confidence, and they're probably quite pleased to have a game which, by any definition, is probably quite winnable. I fancy backing them for that.
Yeah, Bradford, of course, going for promotion in League One. Reading are down in 18th in the Championship, so not an awful lot of difference in league position between them. Bradford are 13-8, the draw's 19-10, and Reading are 2-1. John Stead, the man who's been scoring goals from the FA Cup as well, I think he's got 5 in his 6 games, he scored in every round. This season is worth a look as well. You can back him to score in a Bradford win, and that's 5-1, which might attract a few people. Villa West Brom, like we needed to see that one again. It was only on Tuesday night, and it was 2-1 to Villa, and they're going to do it all over again. 15-8 Villa, 7-4 the draw, and West Brom 19-10. You could probably see the same thing again. It would be a big surprise to see anything different, really, wouldn't it, Ian?
I think the only thing you might see a bit more of is a few more looping crosses over Ben Foster.
Yes.
I'm Sherwood, and he's got Tony Parks in his backroom team now, and they will definitely have isolated Ben Foster as something that they need to work on right from the start. They'll be particularly ruthless on him. So there's a big question mark about how he'll recover, because he really did have a stinker. It wasn't just the penalty. You know, there was the one that squeezed through his legs. There was him waving at crosses as they soared over his head. And, of course, Villa will be absolutely full of confidence now. That was the kind of cathartic result that they've been desperate for. And a lot of things get said about Tim Sherwood, but you look at the intensity of the way that Aston Villa played, never mind the quality so much, but the intensity of it and the way that roused the crowd, that it felt like a real turning point for Villa there.
Yeah, it did. A masterstroke as well off the pitch. And please don't take this in any way as being cynical. But bringing Stylian Petrov back to the club as a coach is a masterstroke, in my opinion.
Well, absolutely, because he's well-respected around the club and among the fans. Anyone who's met him will tell you that he's very sharp. He knows his stuff. He obviously, you know, in that old cliche, knows his way around the club. And it's another example of Tim Sherwood surrounding himself with good people. Mm. You know, you get different characters for different elements of man management. Tony Parks is very much a shouter, so you've got that covered. It's fascinating to watch because I'm sort of glowing with praise for Sherwood here. I am actually a bit of a Tim Sherwood cynic. You know, the man has managed two of the biggest 10 teams in England on the back of not having his coaching badges and 6 months' experience. And there are a lot more qualified managers who've never been given these opportunities. So he has to do a lot to prove that he should be there at this level. And there's a lot of Tottenham fans who aren't entirely convinced that this is where he belongs, certainly on a tactical level. But right now, this stage of the season, it's a dogfight, and he needs people to be putting everything into the games and actually fighting for him, which they weren't necessarily doing under Paul Lambert.
True enough, yeah. The way you've talked about Liverpool on this podcast, I expect you think they'll make easy work of Blackburn Rovers this weekend in the FA Cup. Liverpool are 3-1 on, Blackburn are 12-1 to win this tie, and the draw is 100-30.
This one is where the shock could happen.
Really?
Yeah, because wow. Liverpool are so full of confidence, to the point that maybe they'll get complacent. Blackburn, I was at Ewood Park for the Stoke game. They're not a good football team. They're not a good football team at all. They're very, very prosaic. They're not doing anything special. It's 4-4-2. It's get the ball long up to Gustedi or into the channels so that Josh King can run onto it. That was all that beat Stoke. It was just there was a massive gap in the defence and they exploited it brilliantly. But you look at a team like Liverpool who get confident and they want to get forward and they want to get those wing-backs forward as well. There's going to be gaps on the flanks behind them. It is the kind of game where you could see Blackburn just lofting one up and scoring on the break and Liverpool just not getting it together. If I were a betting man, I would probably be throwing a couple of quid just on the shock in that one.
Yeah, very good. Blackburn to win that match is 12-1. And the final game of the weekend pairs the two big guns, the two teams that we've already talked about, Man United versus Arsenal. Man United are the favourites in this one, 6-4. The draw and Arsenal are both the same price, 2-1 each of them. You mentioned how Arsenal went to Manchester City and surprised us all. Do you think they'll go and try and do a similar thing here against Manchester United? Because even under Moyes, Man United beat Arsenal. They've got a bit of a sign over Arsenal, haven't they?
Yeah, they do tend to have a decent record. And it's very, very difficult because, I mean, first of all, no one really knows what formation United will come out in.
Least of all, Louis van Gaal.
I think he's used every formation that's ever been used by any team.
I think he just chucks, I think he gets a dice. And just rolls the dice and think, oh, well, yeah. Remember that novel, The Dice Man? That must be him, I reckon.
But then, this might not be entirely correct, but I saw something on Twitter that said of the 18-man squad that Manchester United named the other day, I think 10 of them played in central midfield at one point or another, which told its own story. There's not really that kind of consistency. What there is, of course, is great individual talent. It's just finding a way to link it all together. And thus far, Van Gaal hasn't quite done it. Arsenal, it will very much depend on, I think, you know, it's one of those first 10, 15-minute games. If they can get at them and rock them on their heels and get the crowd silenced, then, you know, perhaps they've got a chance. There's certainly no question of them lacking individual ability, Arsenal. I think the bookies are basically like me. They've just split it right down the middle and said, nah, we haven't got a clue, but we'll definitely be watching.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? Yeah, definitely. Arsenal 2-1 then. Man United 6-4 in the draw, 2-1. I'm going to spring this on you a little bit, Ian, but every week we ask our guests from the Football Writers Association to pick a bet of the week, a result that they think will happen. You were keen on Bradford. Would the Bantams get your vote this weekend?
Well, I'm one of those people, I don't necessarily bet for things that I think will happen. I bet for the things that I think might happen and have massive odds. So if I was just going to throw a couple of quid at something, I honestly think it would be Blackburn Rovers.
Wow, yeah. That'll probably stand out as the greatest bet of the week on the FWA podcast if that comes in, to be honest.
That's where the value is.
Certainly, yeah, definitely. Ian, thanks very much for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Oh, it's been great to be on. Thanks for having me.
You can follow Ian on Twitter, Ian McIntosh, or go to the Twitter account for the set pieces. It's just at the set pieces. I got to give you a little plug, though. I mentioned to Ian before I called you up, I was reading the reviews for your book, Johnny Cook, The Impossible Job. Go and check that out. It's on theblizzard.co.uk. I've actually got it ready to add to my basket, the digital version of this, because I'm at Cheltenham next week, and it'll give me something to read in the evenings when I'm trying to avoid drunk an Irishman. The reviews are so good that I want to buy the book anyway. I don't care what the book's like, Ian. I'm sure it's very good. The reviews are fantastic.
That may work out quite well for both of us.
I'm just going to read Gabriel Marcotti's review, which I'm presuming you know Gabriel Marcotti. This conversation must have happened between you. The review is this. Ian McIntosh, having run out of milk, once asked whether it was morally acceptable to put his wife's expressed breast milk intended for his baby daughter in his coffee. The book is everything you expect from someone like that. That just makes me want to read the book. What a great review.
It doesn't necessarily say whether it's a good book or not, does it?
But it's intriguing nonetheless.
It's an absolutely true story. It's during the Copper America. My wife and I had just had a baby. It was 2011, and I wanted a coffee with milk, and we had no milk. And I'll tell you what, it is okay, and it does taste very nice.
It can't taste any worse than soya milk, can it? That's my view.
Well, exactly. It's a little bit sweet with maybe elements of honey.
I hope that's not just. I hope that's across the board and not just something that's peculiar to your particular milk. Anyway, thanks very much, Ian. We'll look out for you on Twitter, and thanks for your time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. You can find this podcast at the Football Writers website, which is footballwriters.co.uk. All William Hill's podcasts are at Audio Boom, and you can subscribe on iTunes as well. Just go to William Hill Podcasts and hit the subscribe button, and they'll be magically delivered to your phone, your tablet, or your PC. Thanks for listening, and if you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed this week, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.